Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Happy Halloween, Dad.
Whoa, happy Halloween to you. It's almost here.
Probably by the time you are listening to this, well, I guess not. We can still got a couple days. So go up tomorrow, day after tomorrow. So yeah, so we're almost there. getting into the mood, going into the Halloweekend. There we go.
Halloweeny weekend. All those Halloweenies.
Halloween on a Sunday is a little rough for partygoers, you know, but I feel like all that is a good excuse to just make Halloween a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event.
You know, but everything they make Halloween is not always good. This morning, I went to get Cooper because I watch her on Wednesday mornings, and she was eating turkey on an orange bagel, and of course, it was a Halloween bagel.
Oh.
And she had taken about two nibbles and she wasn't eating it. I said, well, Cooper, aren't you going to eat your turkey bagel sandwich? She goes, it's like I'm eating tree branches. And I said, well, come on with Pop. I'll take you to my house and we'll get something else for breakfast.
Was it flavored?
I don't know if it was or just if it was orange. I didn't try it with that recommendation that it tasted like eating tree branches. So I said, do you want the turkey? No, it's on that bad bun.
If you're a fan of pumpkin spice, I think that's fine. A pumpkin spice bagel sounds like not a bad thing, but definitely not with turkey. You're kind of going for a weird Thanksgiving vibe there.
I don't even know if it was pumpkin spice. I think it was just orange, and it kind of was had the lines on it. You know, like how a pumpkin has like the lines around
it. Okay.
So it was kind of a bagel made that way. But I don't think it was flavored with anything. But it didn't look real appealing.
Yeah, that's not maybe the pairing that you'd go for with that.
Yeah. But I just thought it was funny. A three-year-old describing it's like eating tree branches.
It's a very articulate palate. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps today we have something a little bit more palatable for Halloween to talk about.
Yeah.
The last of our spooky episodes, I guess. Possibly. I thought, you know, we've talked about this drink, I think, on lists of cocktails with spooky names before. Some of the elements to its story we've talked about, but I wanted to devote an entire episode to it because it deserves it. And that is the zombie.
Ooh, the zombie, the Walking Dead drink. Ooh.
Yes. There's a lot of sort of lore, history, unique variations, some kind of cool ingredients in there. Let's talk about where zombies come from.
Yeah, because there's also a lot of misconceptions. I know that I was one because I've referred to it before on this podcast, mm-hmm. talking about mixing up a zombie, and my idea of what I thought a zombie wasn't anything near what it actually is. I mean, when we were teenagers sneaking drinks and stuff like that, we had the understanding that a zombie was just all the different liquors poured into one glass and you drink that and it knocks you on your ass. And I mean, they called it and it was just all the liquors poured in there together and you drink it. It's not supposed to taste good. It's just supposed to get you there, you know?
Well, and I mean, I will say probably when you would have been drinking things called a zombie, that's not far from what people were probably making at the time, which we'll get into why. But there was a long period of time where zombies were probably being served, but zombies weren't being made, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but there is a proper recipe to a zombie. Yes. Maybe several variations, but it's proper recipe. It's not just hodgepodge of throw anything you got in the liquor cabinet into the glass.
But that proper recipe was lost for a while. To start things at the beginning, just some you know, like the root of the word zombie and how it came into the Western vernacular. The Oxford English Dictionary states that the word zombie is of West African origin, and it was first recorded in English in 1819 in A History of Brazil by the poet Robert Southey. Now, it's related to the word nzambe, meaning a god, and zumbi, meaning fetish, in the Kikongo language of the Congo. It also was the namesake of a snake god in the voodoo religion, but this is a common misconception where, like, zombies are an element of voodoo. They're actually not part of the real practice of voodoo. It was a sort of a fear and a belief in the same societies that practiced voodoo, but the concept of zombies were more of something that witches could make at the time outside of the voodoo practice. More of a superstition than a religious belief for the people that brought this idea to the New World. This ability to reanimate a body and control it was nonetheless a belief of these people. And as enslaved individuals were brought to the Western world, obviously their beliefs and religious practices came with them, and the concept of the zombie was introduced to the Western imagination. One of the first books to expose Western culture to the concept of the zombie was W.B. Seabrook's The Magic Island. This is another one where it kind of correlates voodoo with zombies, not exactly accurately. And this was followed similarly by the film in 1930 starring Bela Lugosi, White Zombie. So we've kind of got the concept of zombie entering the imagination of the West around this time period.
Well, the first zombie I was aware of was Night of the Living Dead. I can remember going to a drive-in movie theater with my mother, and I was like probably about 10 or 11 or something. And she took me there to see it. It was the first time I ever had to say, "Mom, can we leave? I don't want to watch this anymore." That scared me so bad. But I mean, that was the first time I'd ever seen a movie with zombies in it.
Well, that was 1968. That was really the rebirth. I think more of like the modern concept of zombie we have. Zombie is just something that could be like that's not linked to any sort of religious or magical practices. That was a sort of a significant moment for the genre. But it's interesting that, and I was surprised to read this. I literally had to go back and rewatch the original, but they're not ever called zombies in the original Night of the Living Dead. And in the script notes, Romero would refer to them as ghouls.
Huh.
Now, subsequent films, he embraced the term zombie, but he was actually really inspired by I Am Legend and The Last Man on Earth, which are a book, eventual movie, and a movie that had more like creepy vampires. They were more like vampires. Mm-hmm. And he also was really inspired by like EC Comics sort of vengeful corpses that would come back, you know, like the Tales of the Crypt stuff. So he sort of merged the two ideas into the zombie horde, sort of like crafting the modern zombie, but not really calling it that until other people, like reviewers, called it that, you know?
Yeah, none of the zombie movies I ever saw ever really referred to any connection to voodoo. Most of it was it was connected to the U.S. government doing secret experiments, and they leak stuff out and without regard for the citizenry, and people end up getting turned into zombies.
Yeah, however your zombies originate, you've got the magical thing, you've got the hell is full, so all the corpses have to come back to life because there's no more room for souls. And then you've got the whole like virus angle, you know, military experiments. There's many ways to make a zombie.
That's right.
Well, there are many ways to make a zombie, and there are many ways to make a zombie, which we'll get into.
Yeah, that spills over. That's interchangeable.
Yeah, but it was slightly after those original works, you know, White Zombie and The Magic Island, but considerably before Romero, that the zombie drink came about. Its inventor we have talked about before, Mr. Don Beach. Just a quick review on him. Of course, Don Beach, not his real name. His real name was Ernest Raymond Beaumont Gaunt, and he was an American. He was born in 1907. He grew up between Texas and New Orleans. He's very much a fabled life of like high seas adventures and travel. He was a soldier in World War II, possibly a bootlegger. But there's also he has a well-known reputation for being a storyteller. So what's true, what's not true is hard to say. but what he definitely was a successful barman.
And a legend in his own mind.
Yes, I think he knew how to tell a good story, which, hey, it's a skill, you know. Just after Prohibition ended in 1933, Don Beach opened up Don's Beachcomber Bar in Hollywood. And that's when he began going by Don Beach, supposedly to sort of match the island vibes of his first of its kind. This was really one of the proto-tiki bars of the movement. But other accounts say that the reason he needed to change his name was because he was a well-known bootlegger during Prohibition. So he had to distance himself from his original name so he could operate in the legitimate bar world. But in any case, he was very well versed with mixing rum. It was something that he claimed to learn on his high seas adventures. He was good at it. So however he learned it, he was good at it and became very quickly well known for his heavy hitting, easy drinking, top secret drink recipes.
And they sound delicious.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and definitely like this kicked off what would become the tiki craze, which, you know, as culturally appropriative, if we have, I think as a bar world, this agreed it is. It was a very big movement in bar culture, starting in the mid to late 30s and going up through the 50s.
Yeah, the zombies I choked down, I never expected them to taste good. Looking at the ingredients in these, they could very well taste good, even though you got probably about 7 ounces of liquor in there.
Yeah, well, that's definitely how they were designed to be. I mean, we're not talking about like fake, you know, condensed juices, artificial ingredients. I mean, these were made with very fresh ingredients, top secret syrups, really good rums. This concept of making rum cocktails with a blend of rums, it's not anything that Don Beach invented, but it is something that he introduced again to the American palate and caught on, and is, you know, a very, very good way to drink mixed drinks with rum. And this is where we get the zombie. So the story goes, the first zombie was mixed up in 1934. There was a hungover customer at his bar that asked Don to make him a drink to help him get through this business meeting he had. Don mixed him up something strong but palatable. The man returned a few days later, and he was angry because the concoction had, according to his words, turned him into a zombie for the entire business trip. Now, Don considered that a success, so he put it on the menu.
Exactly the response I was looking for.
I did good. He often referred to it, too, as a mender of broken dreams, which doesn't sound like that's what it was for this customer's case, but, you know.
No.
And he also put a limit on the menu. You could only have two. So maybe this guy had too many zombies. It could have been that.
Yeah, and some guys found that to be a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
You're limited to two. How can I get three? You know, I can do three.
Now you get your friend to order one for you just to prove that you can have it. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like something you'd do, Dad.
Probably.
Or me.
Especially if it came in that cool skull cup that I've seen, that glass skull with a handle on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, this is, I mean, also, you know, along with this craze, you get the real show-off cocktail, the glassware, the garnishes, the colors. I mean, this is the beginning of all that. One thing that was cool about Don was he kept his recipes very secret. Like, we talked about this a bit on the episode we did on him, but he would not... So a lot of times when you're bartending and you're putting like any of your house syrups, juices, whatever, you put them in little bottles so they're easier to pour from, you know? And instead of labeling them with what was in them, he would label them with numbers, and he would know, and only he would know what goes in them and like the recipe for that ingredient. So you would know that this cocktail needs 2 ounces of number three and half an ounce of number five, but you wouldn't know what was in those bottles. And only he had access to like the actual recipes and probably a trusted few. There were enough people around afterwards that we could decipher these, but he kept them really close to his chest and not for like no reason. A lot of people tried to replicate his drinks. I mean, something called a zombie was exhibited at the World's Fair in 1939 by a bartender named Monte Proso, who would go on to be involved in the Copacabana, which is like a whole mob fronted tiki joint. But he presented a drink called the Zombie at the World's Fair, and it was not at all what Don made, but it was just sort of taking the popularity of the name, the popularity of the craze, and doing his own thing with it. And I mean, really, as we get into like, you know, all on up to the 50s, everybody was putting zombies on the menu of their you know, tiki bars. Whatever is in it is in it. So, you know, lots of people were out for his IP during this time.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be a very good way to keep track of these things, because it seems like every drink we've covered, it always has several people that claim to be the original inventor. And, you know, I mean, if you're a bartender, you're going to eventually mix the same things as somebody else does. Just a question of whether you name it and whether you start selling that particular blend or something, or advertising it or something.
Well, this is true, but I've also come around on the idea that it doesn't really, I mean, yes, everything has probably been done before. If you put four ingredients that are commonly known together in a glass and they taste good, somebody else has probably figured that out.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, if you look at, like, the culinary field, you know, do we know the person that invented, like, coq au vin, you know, like, traditional, like, French recipes? And if you order it at a restaurant and somebody makes it with a couple different spices or a different brine or something, are you going to say, shenanigans, this is wrong? No. You know? Like, if you order beef stroganoff, it might not be the exact same beef stroganoff that you get at 10 different restaurants, and you're not going to question that as an act of, like, it's inauthentic. But with cocktails, we do have that sense that, like, shouldn't this be trademarked? But it can't. Mm-hmm. It's no different. It's just a different recipe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to do because you can't say, nobody has ever mixed these four ingredients until I did it. I am the sole thinker of it. You know, that's why I'd never go on Shark Tank. I figure if I can think of something, then somebody else must have already thought of it, because I'd be the last one to figure something out.
Well, it reminds me of when we first got a frozen machine at one of my old restaurants. It was right around fall. I was like, hey, they want me to put something in the frozen machine. And what goes in a frozen machine but also is good for fall? So I did a penicillin, and because it was frozen, I called it a penicillin. And I thought that was funny. And then I had, like, somebody I know in the bar world reach out to me, be like, excuse me, but so-and-so had a frozen penicillin called a penicillin on their recipe, like, 3 years ago, or on their menu 3 years ago. And I'm like, well, that, yeah, because it's super obvious.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's right there. I don't know.
Wait, you make a, what did you say? Did they copyright the name?
I know.
You know?
You know, I mean.
So what?
Sometimes you make a drink good enough and you give it a name that's catchy enough that people learn that they can say it in a bar and get what they want. But, like, that's a very different process than just coming up with something and trying to, like, get it officiated somehow, which is just not a thing. I don't think it should be, honestly. I think that the nature of the business, the reason that we have, like, the good drinks we have is because so many people can make small variations on popular drinks. And I feel like it's cool that the only way you really, quote-unquote, trademark a drink is if you make something good enough that everybody loves it the way it is, and it gets locked in. It gets locked in via the drinkers, not via corporate office.
Yeah, you weren't making the drink to make history. You were just making it to sell drinks.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think that I still, like, obviously, like, you know, Don kind of keeping his stuff secret made sense when he was in the business, but it caused, you know, a lot of his ideas to be lost for a long period of time after he retired, after his bars closed down. And I mean, really could have been lost to time in general. for the rest of time if it wasn't for one man, who we've also talked about, Jeff Beachbum Barry, a cocktail historian of the modern era. Now, Jeff had encountered, I mean, he was a, you know, sort of a hobbyist in bar history, and had witnessed that, like, zombies really could earn you any number of things at any bar. Like, we're talking like 80s and 90s, you know. And so in order to fix this, he tried to track down the roots of what a zombie originally was. He started his quest in 94, spent like over a decade with fairly fruitless results. It wasn't until 2005, the daughter of one of Don's former bartenders, Dick Santiago, came forward with a scrap of paper that her father apparently kept on him at all time. And they lined it up that it matched from his bar notebook. And in this bar notebook, he had a lot of accurate recipes. Some of Don's recipes are more well-known. So he had in this bar book, from the time he was working at Don's, he had these recipes that were known to be correct. And then this was a page that was torn out that was supposedly the zombie from 1934. So It made sense that this could, in fact, be the legit zombie recipe. But there were some problems, one of which was that there was a mystery ingredient that was simply called Don's Mix. And they could decipher that this included grapefruit, but there was the other ingredient was just listed as spice number 4. So, you know, had to track down what spice number 4 was. They figured out that Don got it from a now defunct, like, company that made syrups. And luckily, another retired bartender who had worked with the same company came forward eventually and recalled what number 4 was, which was a cinnamon syrup. So the secret to the original zombie was fully unlocked. And Beach Bum Barry published in 2007 in his book Sippin' Safari, the original recipe for the zombie, the 1934 zombie, along with two further zombies that he deciphered. So Don changed his recipes up a lot. So there are three recipes that can be tied back to the zombie from different time periods, but that first one was really the one that took some finesse.
Well, that Beach Bum Barry, he was like a bulldog getting hold of a bone. He wasn't going to let go. He just kept digging until he got the answers he needed.
Yeah, well, and I mean, he did well, and there have been the concept of a cocktail historian, I think, is a more modern one. I mean, you have like David Wondrich, who did a lot for classic cocktails as well, just sort of digging in and figuring out who really made it and how was it made. And these are pretty important people in the figures. We tend to think that these recipes just stuck around and you just had to look for them. But there were a handful of people that actively brought back from beyond the grave, so to speak, recipes.
Ha ha ha.
To us. Hey. Yeah.
Brought them back to life, reanimated them.
Absolutely. And then that's absolutely what Beach Bum Barry did. That's what Dave Wondrich did for a lot of drinks. So, you know, we have them to credit for a lot of the intelligence behind the return to classic cocktails that we've enjoyed over the past two decades now, I guess. So That original zombie. So we've talked so much about it. I haven't even told you what's in it. other than grapefruit and cinnamon. But according to Barry, the original zombie has lime juice, falernum. Falernum is a spice syrup. It's got lime, clove, almond, sugar, and rum. So it's a rum-based syrup. It's got a couple rums in it, usually a gold rum, a dark rum, an overproof rum. It's got grenadine, some Pernod or absinthe, some Angostura, and then, of course, that fabled Don's Mix. Now, the original recipe, according to Beach Bum Barry, it's blended. I've also seen it shaken, but in either case, it's garnished with a sprig of mint, usually with crushed ice. And so there's a lot there. You know, I think when we think of these like high octane, you know, rum punches, you just assume it's going to be rum with a bunch of sugar. But having falernum there, having the Don's Mix, which is kind of a sophisticated combination of cinnamon and grapefruit, there's a lot of layers there that are working towards like a good balanced cocktail, not just rum hidden behind a bunch of sugar.
Yeah. Well, I would like to have seen the thought process when he poured in the first bit of rum, and he said, "You know what would help that rum? More rum." And he adds in more of a different kind of rum, and he said, "Now you know what it needs? A third rum," and pours more rum in. You know, said, "Okay, now what can we add to our rum drink? Our three rums."
Well, but that's how a lot of like classic rum drinks are made, and even from like places where rum is sort of the drink of choice, it's usually you're blending your rums, you know, like you got like a funky, super like estery Jamaican rum, you're gonna counteract it with maybe a slightly grassier like white like sugarcane juice rum. And then add some overproof to like drive up the heat. Like, I think it's really cool. And I'm in no way like versed. I think rum is one of the categories that I would like to be more proficient with. But somebody that knows how to properly mix a rum cocktail, I think, is a real artist. Because that's a whole other concept.
They probably had a little song that went along with it. It was like, rum, 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 your drink, two is all you need.
At least three. And we don't treat any other spirits like that, I don't think, right? I mean, sometimes you'll find a split base. Like, you might have a cocktail that combines like rye and mezcal. You know, you're gonna harness the sort of smoky, spicy qualities of both. You know, you're gonna mix, I don't know, like bourbon and scotch, something like that. Like, a split base cocktail isn't unheard of, but there's not another base spirit that gets mixed among itself as heavily as rum, which I think is cool. And it also is because rum is so different. I think maybe of all the categories of spirits, rum is the one where there's the most variance. There's so many things we call rum where it's like, this is a whole other thing than that other thing. Calling both of them rum. Okay.
Well, I like the idea of the cinnamon being in there. That sounds appealing to me as part of a mix in a drink.
Well, I that Don's mix, and I feel like a broken record with it, because if I don't know what to do with a drink, so often I just go, maybe Don's mix. It's my favorite thing. It's two parts, traditionally should be white grapefruit juice, to one part cinnamon simple syrup. And it is just, it's such a great syrup. It's great just in an old-fashioned, as like your, instead of your regular simple syrup, like using that little bit of grapefruit. Well, I mean, it's a fair amount of grapefruit juice, but there's something about it. Cinnamon and grapefruit naturally go together really well, and putting it in a cocktail, just, you don't have to do much more. There's like eight other ingredients in a proper zombie, so he did a lot more, but you don't have to.
Now, do they sell it somewhere, or do you have to make it yourself?
You gotta make it, and I would say you should make it. Anytime you're dealing with like pressed citrus of any kind, really, but especially things like grapefruit and orange, you should always make it, because they degrade pretty rapidly.
Okay.
So you do make it, but it's not hard to make. You know, you just need fresh grapefruit juice and a cinnamon syrup.
All right. Yeah.
Now, the evolution of the zombie, there's two other significant ones that that Barry published, the 1950s zombie, which I'm not going to read you every proportion, but it's similar in that it has like the base of the three rums. It's got lime and lemon juice. This one is weird because it introduces pineapple juice and passion fruit syrup. And then it also includes brown sugar and Angostura. So for this one, you mix everything together and you stir it until the brown sugar dissolves, and then you shake it. You can blend it, but, you know, traditionally shaken. And that one, I actually worked an event for a while where we made all three of these as like a flight of zombies.
Wow.
Zombies on a plane.
They're like a flock of seagulls.
Exactly. A flight of zombies. But this was, I think, maybe my least favorite, because it is so much, leans into that, I think, that 1950s palate, which we talked about before, that starts to get into when things are very sweet. You know, you've lost the dryness from the grapefruit and the cinnamon, and you've replaced it, and the falernum, which is a little bit earthy, and you've replaced it with just more sweetness. And then the third iteration is the 1956 zombie. Same base of three rums, still has lime juice. But it kind of goes back to the original a bit more. It's got the falernum, it's got the grenadine, it's got grapefruit, it has the Pernod, it has Angostura, but it also works in maraschino liqueur And that unsweetened pineapple juice hasn't gone away yet. So, you know, probably my second favorite of the three. And this one is more traditionally blended, but also can be shaken.
Well, they all three sound delicious.
There's not a bad one in the bunch. And, you know, the one thing you won't see in any of these is any sort of, like, fake, like, batch of anything, you know. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of, even where there are the fruit juices, like the pineapple juice, you're never getting more than, like, an ounce in a drink. The passion fruit syrup is presumably a fresh passion fruit syrup, so. And these were Don's recipes. I think he was adjusting them to meet the demands of the time.
Well, that's a lot of stuff, though, if you were going to do it at home. You got to make all those syrups and all those things. That would be a little bit daunting to try to do one right.
I mean, this style of bartending as a whole is the event that I used to work, which was just devoted to this era of cocktails. We would start prepping at like 10 a.m. to start at 8 p.m. just because how many syrups you needed to make, and they needed to be fresh. It's a very challenging style of bartending. I really respect people that have committed to being good at it. I have not, just to clarify.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we talked about the mojito, and we talked about how a lot of bartenders complain they hate to make that. Well, heck, that's nothing compared to this one.
I wouldn't even know what to do if somebody walked in and asked me for a zombie. Like, I just wouldn't even know where to start. Even if I, like, sometimes, just because of the way that I make drinks, sometimes there would be Don's Mix behind the bar. So I guess presumably I could make it, but it's like, I don't even know how to price that. It is just so much work and so many ingredients and so much rum. You know, I mean, that's what, like,
it'd be at least three drinks.
Go to a bar that knows what they're doing for this kind of a drink. Don't assume that your local cocktail bar is going to do right by you.
That'll be $55 for that drink.
Yeah. But, you know, I do think if you're having, however you're celebrating Halloween, especially if you're having a little home party, maybe you don't want to make all three of these, but if you wanted to put some work into making a classic cocktail that has a good payoff, is really delicious, has a lot of cocktail history wrapped up in it. I think the original zombie is a really fantastic drink. And a lot of it, outside of the citrus, you can batch all together and, you know, have it ready to go.
Yeah, and you can tell how much the culture has changed from those days. The people that were into that tiki bar culture and everything, they called them tiki files. And I don't think you want to be referred to as a tiki file. That just sounds bad.
Well, and we discussed this back when we did a two-part episode, this was before your time, Dad, on tiki culture. And I think that, like, there's an understanding now in the bar world that there is a lot about it that is, it's problematic, it's appropriative. It took a lot of just visual elements from cultures that it didn't understand and incorporated it. And, I mean, this really goes back to, you know, the story of Don Beach. You know, part of the reason he opened this island theme bar was supposedly he gathered all of these things on his travels. He was, you know, this great sailor who'd gone all over the place all throughout the South Pacific and brought this stuff back. What the often told truth is that there's no record of him actually being outside of his time in service. He was not a sailor, but he did work on some Hollywood movie lots, and he got a lot of props, you know, like, that he used in his bar. So it was sort of an artifice. It was birthed from this idea, this concept of island life, without any, like, recognition of what any of these things meant, you know, like the symbols that they were using. Even the word tiki relates back to, like, a carved figure of, like, a god. We use this word, but we're really talking about, like, things that were sort of lifted off Polynesian culture but not used appropriately. So the drinks are great. I don't think that we should get rid of the drinks. I think that, you know, we can, I've taken to calling them island drinks. Like, it's island style mixing, because you know, we can separate it from all the design aspects that are in bad taste, and we can still keep the good drinks and the, like, science and good mixology that went into them.
Well, you can say what you want about him, but the guy was a hustler. I mean, he found something and he sold it and he sold himself and he became whatever he needed to be successful. And he was successful.
He became Don Beach.
Yeah. And it worked.
And people bought that. That's wild. Yeah. Like, if you're going to assume a fake name to avoid the government because you were a bootlegger and you're like, I'm Don Beach. This is my bar, Don Beach Comers.
Well, you know, the Beach Boys were growing up in that era. That's probably where they got their name from. What would be cooler than being like Don Beach would be the Beach Boys. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't, it's great. These drinks are really great examples of like multi-layered builds of rum mixing, which is a very specific art. I that shouldn't be lost. But, you know, I think it's worth recognizing that, hey, there's a reason that there are lots of conversations in the bar world right now about, like, we can still embrace the mixology and the intelligence behind the tiki movement without really clinging to the idea of tiki culture. Because I think it's pretty silly now. And a little hurtful. So that should matter.
Well, I'm looking forward to trying a proper zombie if I can make all those ingredients.
Well, for the classic zombie, falernum you can buy. You can find falernum. To be honest, it's a lot to make falernum. But there are lots of good brands of velvet falernum out there on the marketplace. And really the only other make, because grenadine you can buy, is the Donce Mix. Donce Mix is easy. You just make an infused cinnamon simple syrup and you cut it with grapefruit juice. So that's really the only make.
Okay. I'll get some Red Hots and melt them down for my cinnamon syrup. Hot tamales?
No, just cinnamon sticks. That's all you need.
Oh, okay, cinnamon sticks.
Just cinnamon sticks and simple syrup.
Okay.
Don't do that. I mean, I guess if you want to make it like a Halloween themed one, using Halloween candy kind of works, but it also sounds like it might be gross. I did a play off of a zombie years ago, and I called it a Romero, and I'm trying to remember. It was like a last word build, but it had Don's Mix and rum and lime, and I can't think of what the other ingredient was, but it was sort of a zombie redux.
Well, it sounds like, you know, anything you do along those lines, it's not wrong. Somewhere along the line, it probably had that sort of a deviation into that.
Somebody else probably already made that, too.
That's right. So don't go naming it. Somehow it'll get on you.
There you go. So there you go. So there's a rundown of the history of zombies and the zombie. Hopefully, you're going to be making some cool drinks for this Halloween weekend. I certainly will be. Agreed to make batch cocktails for a couple of events.
Yeah, and I've learned that I was not drinking zombies when we were sneaking around in our parents' liquor cabinet. We were just drinking all the shit left over in the cabinet.
That'll get you to the zombie mindset, I think. You know, that's probably what that first dude experienced. You can just get that to there with a much more pleasant drink, is the message.
Yeah, they did not taste good. You didn't drink them for taste, no.
No, like a proper zombie, especially that like original 34 recipe, you will think you are drinking, and you are, a high-class, fancy, just well-balanced cocktail. And if you have multiples, you'll regret your choices. So that is true. It is very true.
You will rise from the dead.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the proportions are what? It's an ounce and a half each of two rums plus an ounce of overproof rum. So that's 4 ounces alone of rum, and one of those ounces is overproof.
Yeah.
So that'll get you there.
Enjoy your drink. Don't leave the bar stool. You will regret it.
So over on the video, we will be making up some at least the classic zombie. I don't know if we'll make a It's a lot of prep for all the zombies.
Yeah, I think one will do it.
Yeah, maybe we'll just have two and we'll test the theory. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. It's always an education, and correct some of my wrong thinking as a young man, so that as an old man, yeah, I won't show my ignorance.
Zombie is.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't even think about it until we were talking about it, but I like that, like, oh, there's so many different types of zombies, and there's so many different types of zombies.
Yes, that's true. Both.
I think the classic recipe is sort of it's the slow moving zombie, you know? It catches up with you and then you're done, but you don't think it's just got that slow crawl and you're like, no, I'm fine. Oh no, it's here. That is exactly the effect of a proper zombie.
Well, that's what freaked me out about World War Z. Those zombies could get it, man. They could move. And I'm like, that's not fair. I don't want to live in a world with zombies like that.
Oh, like the parkour zombies?
Yeah. They were like running up each other's backs. That's how they would get over walls. They would just run up there and pile up, and the other ones would run right up their backs and over. These guys knew what they were doing. Yeah. You couldn't outrun these guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I think is the scarier zombie is the fast moving zombie. I feel like I enjoy in movies the slow-moving zombie more because there's always that sense of, like, there's so much you could do to avoid them, so when they do get you, it's that much more upsetting.
Well, that's like The Walking Dead. On The Walking Dead, the zombies have just become, like, background. You know, it's just like swatting a mosquito or something. They don't worry about those. It's other humans you have to watch out for. Those are the problem because all the other humans are trying to kill all the other humans because they don't trust any of them.
I haven't watched that show in a while, and I dropped off at the comic a while ago, too. Is that where we're at now? It's just no zombies? Zombies just set pieces?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's tons of zombies, but, you know, they've got like the, you know, Rick's 6-year-old daughter or whatever going out and stabbing them in the head. So, you know, they don't care. You know, the zombies are not a big threat. Very rarely does anybody get bit or anything. It's mostly the other humans you encounter that are the problem because they can't trust any of them, which is kind of true to life, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't been through a close to apocalypse type situation these past years so that I know what human nature would do. And I'm like, yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Not the plague that we have to worry about. It's the other people that don't care if you die.
That won't wear a mask and don't want to get vaccinated.
Just a world of Negans.
A world of Negans. Oh my God.
All right. Are you gonna dress up for Halloween?
Well, I had told Mom that she should get a Squid Game costume so that we could wear that out. And she said she was going to, but I don't think she ever ordered them. So I don't know. If they came, though, that's what I was going to wear. And I figured at my age, I'd get number one.
Oh, you just want the suits?
Yeah.
The little sweatsuits? Oh, yeah. That'd be so cute.
Yeah, they've got them for sale.
Oh, that's easy to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just need, I mean, even if you can't order it, you can get just like a turquoise jumpsuit.
Yeah, but they have that. They have the suits with the numbers on them, and they have, you know, 456, and I think that was what his number was, and one. And then they have the red guard costumes too that you can wear with the face piece on them and everything.
Ah, but you all want to be the participants.
Well, we figured Mom would be the guard and I would be the participant because that's about the way life is.
Wow.
You know,
well, I don't know how to respond to that.
She keeps me in line. She keeps me in line. That's what I'm saying.
Yikes. But then if you're number one, then so you're the old man that's this. So I don't know. Ooh, spoilers for Squid Games.
Uh-oh. Just forget you heard that.
Redact that, Dad. You got to redact that.
All right. I'll try. I'll black it out, you know, like they do on redacting items on papers.
Yes. Please. I don't want to have angry people because we've spoiled Squid Games. Well. All right. Well, thank you for listening. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Bluescast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, you can email us at neatthebluescast@gmail.com. If you would like to join our Patreon, we have one. You can get rewards like stickers and coasters and free videos, all of which are on their way, newly released, all sorts of stuff. So if you haven't checked the Patreon in a minute, check it out. If you want to discuss your favorite spooky cocktail or version of a zombie or your theories about Squid Game, if you haven't finished it yet, you can do that in our Facebook group.
Meet the Booze Cast group.
There you go. Okay. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been... What's your favorite zombie movie, Dad?
Favorite zombie movie? The scariest one was World War Z. Like I say, they had fast-moving zombies, and that one freaked me out. With my bad knees, I couldn't get away from the zombies. I don't have a chance. If that ever happens, I'm dead meat.
You can't get away from zombies because you don't have zombies.
Because I have bad knees. The zombies get my bad knees.